Sunday, March 13th, 2011, episode number 5 of the Brewers Favorite Podcast with your host, Dakota Schmidt and Nick McIver. And on this episode, of course, we have an interview with author of the new book, The Extra 2%, which is about the, how the Rays became a laughing stock to a World Series team. We're going to talk to him. He's also the host of the Jonah Carey podcast. And after we're done with the Jonah Carey, me and Nick talk about some of the Brewers' entries. Of course, the big one is the Greinke cracking the ribs injury, where it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks. So here are the interview, and of course, me and Nick talking about the Brewers, of course, on the Brewers' Favorite Podcast. Enjoy, everybody.
Jadon Tate. And that dude from the Bay. Metal, get back. The name's Jay Dante and I'm an ill individual. I do what I say, you can say that I'm literal. Whack MCs decay when I'm lyrical. I don't spit to make beef, but I can't spit a bull. So watch out, kid, I'm cooling in ice water in a locked up fridge. Just in Alaska, chilling out on the iced out bridge. An attempt to can demobilize most eyelids, yep. Super hyper mega cool. Always coming out on top like reciprocals. No second guessing like official rules. Y'all talking about spitting, let's get control.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode number 5 of the Brewers Here Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Schmidt. And alongside me this week, of course, is the great Nick McIver. Nick, how are you doing this week?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, me too. And once again, for better or for worse, I think for worse for this show, because he knows more about baseball than both me and you. Of course, Abe is not gonna be here on the show for personal reasons that I don't want to discuss on the show, but on the show, I personally am gonna interview the great Jonah Carey. He's the author of a new book that got released this week called The Extra 2%, which is about the rise of the Tampa Bay Double Rays. He's also host of a podcast called the Jonah Carey Podcast, JonahCarey.com, all that good nerdy baseball stuff. And after that, of course, we're going to talk about the Greinke injury and some other Brewers injuries. And of course, we are going to talk about some the spring training games that have happened since last episode of the Brewers Beer Podcast. So we're going to break. Jonah Carey, break. Brewers Talks, everybody. We'll be right back.
For my people in the front, in the noise blade section. This is for the headshots, dropping the mix. My people in the front, oh, confidence bed. Batters in the box, top of the pitch. Hilltop hoods, oh, hopping this bitch. And we got funk leaders, bouncy comp beaters. We bump and pump meters, who drunk, he jumps meters. Jump with us, down the front, if it's just a flavor. Your flavor, come get drunk with us. This life turned out nothing like I by now I should have had some land, some money in my hand, round about 50 grand, but I got nothing. Love, I run from the bus, I keep suffering, suffering. The lines of the
hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Brewers. Brewers Beer Podcast, and it's my pleasure to be joined by one of my personal favorite podcasters himself. He hosts the Jonah Carey Podcast, and he also has a book coming out next week. Of course, it's Jonah Carey. Jonah, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Dakota. How are you?
All right. And next week, you're coming out with a book. Tell everybody a little bit about that.
Sure. It's called The Extra 2%. It is nominally about the Tampa Bay Rays, but that's sort of like saying that Moneyball is about the A's. It isn't really. It's more about baseball and philosophy and how to build a winning team and even how to build a winning business. And there's a lot of lessons that can be applied to whatever, a baseball team, a basketball team, a local gas station. If you're the CEO of Google, all this stuff is in play. And so it's a combination of really talking about how the team went from being terrible and a big laughing stock to winning the AL East two of the last 3 years, and then it gets into stories. There's a story about how they almost drafted Albert Pujols and how that would have affected the franchise. Mm-hmm. There's some great old stories about Vince Namoli and the crazy things that he used to do. I went to Joe Madden's hometown. It's a little mining town in Pennsylvania, and interviewed his whole family and wrote a chapter just about him. And so, yeah, it's a pretty diverse book. You don't have to be a stat head or a gigantic sports nerd. If you're just a casual sports fan, even if you have no particular interest in the Rays, I think you'll like it. It's easy, breezy read, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think some guy with the Pittsburgh Pirates should check that out.
Yeah, I would say the Pirates are good. You know, even the Brewers are a good market for it. Anastasio and the Brewers, they're starting to spend more money,
Yeah. Obviously,
and they're not necessarily taking the micro-small market approach, but I do think that there is something to be said for just smart business principles. Let's put it this way. The Brewers are not the Yankees, so there are some lessons there.
Yeah. But, like, speaking of the Yankees, we're going to talk about baseball for a second. Speaking of the Yankees, it just feels like Yeah. They're not really getting those big-time free agents anymore. Like, not a lot of people want to play for the Yankees. Like, let's take a look at Cliff Lee. If it wasn't for the whole, you know, wife and fan situation, he would probably be a Yankee.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I'm ready to paint with a broad brush and say that just because Cliff Lee decided to go to Philadelphia, where he's still making $125 million, and when you take into account standard of living, not living in New York, he probably will end up with more money in his pocket anyway. You know, factoring in all that, I think that it's just one guy, and I think that the next guy that comes down the pike, whoever it might be, if Pujols goes out on the market and the Yankees make the biggest offer, there's a very good chance that Pujols will be a Yankee. I mean, that's just the way it is. So, you know, they'll always be in contention. But, yeah, for this one player, it certainly makes a big, big difference. And, you know, someone had said, I don't know if it was on Twitter or what, but they were saying the Yankees had never really aggressively gone after a marquee free agent and not gotten the guy. So when A-Rod signed his first big contract, supposedly the Yankees weren't that interested. And same thing with some of the other guys. But when they wanted Sabathia, they got him. And when they wanted whoever, Teixeira, they got him. And you could go back to they wanted whatever, Catfish Hunter, Dave Winfield. They got those guys too a million years ago. So it's always been that way. And so I think that it was just a little jarring seeing one guy, an elite guy who would have made a big difference on a team that needs starting pitching, just say, yeah, you know what, I'm good. I'm not going to take your $140 or $160 million.
Yeah, but now CC Sabathia might be gone next year, and the Yankees, if CC's gone, then they're really not going to be that good. But when you're saying that, the Yankees went after CC, and they got him. But, like 6 hours before the signing was made, there were reports saying that, hey, the Brewers are favorites. Then, you know, people go to bed, it's like, Yankees signed CC Sabathia.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, and Sabathia being a potential free agent is a concern, but you can turn that around and say, listen, that's $20-odd million off the payroll per season. They can go out and get somebody else. Either they go out as a free agent and get somebody, which is the easiest, obviously, you just outspend. Or they make a trade, and the Yankees have built up their farm system, and they do have some good young prospects, and if they wanted to cash in a bunch of those guys, they could certainly do that, and they could go out and get, you know, I don't know about a specific pitcher, but for example, if Francisco Liriano isn't traded now, you know, there's a pretty good chance that at the end of the season he will be. That's a guy that could be out there next offseason. Who the heck knows, you know, with Carpenter and Wainwright and their injuries, maybe the Cardinals will want to shop those guys, you know, so I think that you're going to see plenty of very good pitching talent, and it would stink if they didn't have, for the Yankees' perspective, if they didn't have Sabathia or Lee. But there are other fish in the sea. That's the thing. If you have the money and you have the will, you can always go get somebody who's pretty good.
Yeah. Speaking of having the will, of course, Doug Melvin said at the start of the offseason, he said, hey, the Brewers need two new starting pitchers. And now we're in March, and he has two new high-quality starting pitchers in Markham and Greinke, even though that people probably think that it probably really don't know much about Markham because of the fact that he did play in Toronto, but he's moving from the AL East, one of the toughest divisions in baseball, with, of course, the Rays, Sox, and Yankees, to the NL Central, with teams like the Astros, the Pirates, and the Cubs.
Yeah. It works out very well for him, and you know, last year, Markham put up a 3.64 ERA. I say only half-jokingly that that's like Bob Gibson putting up a 1.12 ERA in 1968. Because, I mean, when you're talking about the quality of competition and the level of hitting in that division and all that, I mean, that's an unbelievable feat. That really is a tremendous stat. And there are more advanced stats that we could talk about, too. But the bottom line is he's a very good pitcher. And he has had some health concerns. But if he stays healthy, you know, listen, combined, obviously, we know about Greinke. And I think that outside of Milwaukee, Giovanni Gallardo doesn't really get the acclaim that he deserves. In fact, I heard that the Brewers have what do you call them? Bobblehead nights for I'm going to say something extremely politically incorrect, for basically every white guy on the entire team, but not Yanni Gallardo, who's probably their, you know, he's been their ace for the last couple of years. How the heck is that possible? A beloved guy locally, a very good pitcher. And no bobblehead for him. We're good. We got, you know, our backup. George Harris has got five different bobblehead nights, but not Yovani Carrera.
Hey, guys, do you want a Mark Kotze bobblehead?
Mark Kotze is phenomenal. Mark Kotze's wife is another story that we could get into. But, but yeah, you know, so anyway, that aside, I do like Markham. And that top three sets up very well. And I've been very bullish on the Brewers. I've made no bones about the fact that I think they could go far. I did pick them to go to the World Series, which is – you know, it's a random chance when you get to the playoffs in a best of five or best of seven. It's not that the Brewers are, whatever, better than the Phillies or worse than the Rockies or whatever, but they do set up well for the playoffs when you've got that strong top of the rotation. I do like the offense, of course. And let's give some credit to the bullpen. Again, outside Milwaukee, I don't think that many people know about John Axford, and not even just him. I like Zach Braddock, the young lefty. I like a lot of what they've done with that bullpen. The bullpen has been a problem for a few years now. Hoffman was okay, but kind of at the end of his career. Didn't have a lot of depth in the middle innings. Now they really have that. This is a team that does almost everything well. The only thing I'd like to see them do is get a shortstop who doesn't suck, and then I would say, all right, this is a seriously good team.
Yeah, two shortstops. One is probably the worst shortstop in the majors, and two, it's a guy that's 40.
Yeah, you know, and Council's actually a much better option than you. That's the thing. He'll still get on base. He'll still work in at bat and all that. But, yeah, sure, he doesn't have the range. He's not – no power whatsoever. And, you know, if they go down this road and they really are a contender to win the division and maybe even go further, then you have to figure that they're going to loosen the purse strings. I know that the owner has been aggressive in the past. And, listen, if they're willing to go out and get Greinke and Markham, why wouldn't they be willing to go out and get somebody? In fact, it's very funny you know, the type of shortstop they could – obviously it would be great if they can get whatever, Hanley Ramirez, but that's not going to happen. You know, it'd be a good fit. J.J. Hardy would be a good fit. After all this, after having gone down that road, he's a perfectly functional shortstop who would fit in that lineup and catch the ball. That's all they need. They just need Hardy back, and they would be fine. They don't need a superstar. So it would be funny if he was the guy who ended up back there, especially since the Orioles are probably going to be out of contention anyway.
Yeah, you were talking about bobbleheads in a few moments ago, and they're selling the Craig Council bobblehead and no Yovani Gallardo bobblehead. Or I don't think they're selling a Prince Fielder bobblehead.
Is that true? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, he's in his walk year. I guess I could see that. But Gallardo is signed for multiple years. I mean, this is – you're talking about a borderline franchise player. I don't understand that at all. So whatever. I'm not gonna make a statement about the entire state of Wisconsin, but I do think from a management standpoint, they are skewing toward the pale, let's say, in terms of bobblehead selection. Very strange.
Yeah, most definitely. And And yeah, I think it was, I don't know if it was this year or last year, but I think like Ken Rosenthal nominated Yovani Gallardo for Cy Young before the season. Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, he's borderline. I would say that he's got that kind of ability. It's just got to be a weaker year. When you've got Halliday in your league and now Cliff Lee, and it's just loaded. You look at that National League starting pitching, I can think of like 15 guys who could be Cy Young candidates. I mean, it's just loaded, loaded, loaded. And the balance of power, I think, is shifting a little bit. I still, you know, you look at the top AL East teams, they're monsters. But, you know, if the Phillies go to the World Series or the Brewers do, or I really like the Rockies this year. Yeah. Of course, the Giants are the defending champs. I mean, all these teams are strong. You know, they've got pitching. Most of them have pretty good hitting, too. Pretty good defense. You know, there's a lot to be said for what's happened in the NL. Very, very deep NL wildcard race, I would add. You know, the Cardinals, obviously, Wainwright being gone, and Carpenter, it looks like now, too. It opens things up, and whoever doesn't win that Reds-Brewers battle is going to be a serious contender for the wild card, but you got to deal with the loser of the Rockies-Giants battle. The Braves, to me, are going to be a very good team this year if they don't win the East, so that could be a tough team. So you're going to see some very good teams sitting at home in October. There are, in terms of just neutral quality, just if they played in kind of a neutral division, there are like 6-7 teams that are capable at least of winning 90 games this year in the National League.
It was definitely it really amazes me how things have changed in the past, you know, 2 years. Like 2 years ago, everybody was excited. Hey, we got Brayden Looper.
That's right.
Now, we got Zach Greinke. And
no, it's a real team. When the Greinke trade, I can remember where I was when the Greinke trade happened, and I said, "Wow, yeah, this is the real deal. They're going for it." And I was excited. I mean, I'm not a Brewers fan per se, but I'm a fan of teams bootstrapping themselves. And I reject the argument, like if you're a Pirates fan or whatever, I reject the idea that the owner is just going to pocket all this money and they're not going to do anything. And I get that you have to bide your time and kind of build it up. But at a certain point, you just got to, you know, just got to go for it. You just got to go for the brass ring. And this is what they're doing. This is their time. And it's a good idea to go for it now. I don't think it's the end of a window or whatever. It's, you know, there are a couple guys, Fielder and one or two others that are gone, but they still have a bunch of others, obviously, under contract. Weeks just signed a contract. So this team sets up well for the future, but there really is a legitimate chance for the season.
It was definitely, and I haven't been like this excited about a Brewers team forever. No, I still remember, I was younger, but I still remember 2002 when we lost like 105 games, and
yeah.
Ooh, Royce Clayton. And ooh, Eric Young and
yeah,
and Jamie Wright is our ace.
Well, that's right. And I mean, it started with the new ballpark, obviously, but you know, there are more things that have happened. And I mean, look, baseball doesn't have the same system as football, but if you really want an example, let's go to the Green Bay Packers, and this is a template for a team that can do it in a smaller market. It absolutely can be done. Again, we do say that there is a different system in baseball than football. But there is that capability, and it just comes down to talent. And you just got to be smart about developing your talent, and then when the time comes to add the one or two players, just be aggressive. So, you know, it could be a disappointing season for the Brewers. It's possible, but you can't say that they didn't try, and that's the most important thing. And there are teams that just flat out do not try.
Hey, we live in Wisconsin. We're used to this, disappointment.
Listen, I'm a Montreal Expos fan. So too bad. At least you have a team.
Yeah, at least. Yeah, we're going to shy away from baseball for a second, but like you're talking about Montreal not having a baseball team, and
yep.
And there's like basketball just losing, probably going to lose a few teams in the next upcoming years. Like Seattle lost a team a few years ago, and
yeah.
Some guys made a great movie. I actually interviewed them on my book show, a movie called Sonic Skate.
Yep.
You ever seen that?
I have not. It was about them moving. That's interesting. Was there like investigative journalism
yep.
done and looking? Yeah, that's great. I mean, I got to see that. That's good.
Yeah, and Sacramento might lose a team, and probably Milwaukee.
Charlotte, maybe. Well, I don't know about Milwaukee, but Charlotte and Sacramento are in big trouble.
Yeah, but the thing about Milwaukee is the fact that the owner's not getting any younger. He's in his mid-70s, and
sure.
He really doesn't have a family. Doesn't have a wife. Doesn't have any kids.
Well, I mean, the team can go into trust. Like, if he dies tomorrow, God forbid, but if that happens, I mean, the team could go into trust and the NBA could arrange for a new owner. So, I mean, it might turn into new hands. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to move to Columbus.
Yeah, but Columbus, wow. But we also have one of the oldest arenas in the NBA.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I've been down this road with the Expos and now writing a book about the Tampa Bay Rays. Mm-hmm. Someone's always going to be a small market team. Someone's always going to have one of the oldest stadiums. You can't everybody have a $300 million payroll and a brand new stadium and the most beautiful cheerleaders and the best cleanup hitter or the best point guard. It just can't be. There's always going to be, I don't want to say haves and have-nots, but there's always going to be teams.
There's always going to be the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, and you know what? The Indiana Pacers are fine. They have a history. They were a team that made it to the finals. Reggie Miller is one of the most popular players, or at least most well-known players in the last 20 years. And the Bucks have a history, too. I mean, you know, you got to go back a ways to the real big guys. You're talking about Jabbar and Robertson and those guys. But, you know, this is still a team with a legacy. And I'll tell you, fans come out. I love the Section 6 idea with Bogut. I think that's one of the most awesome promotions I've ever heard of. And there's always going to be a way. And you just cannot have sports leagues that only exist in New York and Chicago and L.A. I think it's stupid and I think it's short-sighted. And all the speculation, I got to tell you, it makes me almost a little angry. I don't like the fact that the vultures are circling and saying, yeah, we're going to get our hands on this team and move them here and whatever. There are real fans who go to Bucks games, who pay money, who make $40,000 a year on their teachers, but they find a way to make it work, and they take their kids and whatever.
Yeah, then after the game, they go on Twitter, go on
and it's like that in Tampa Bay, and, you know, there were fewer people, but I can tell you, I was one of those yahoos in Montreal, and we were hardcore too, and it's always going to be that way. It makes me sad anytime any team moves, or there's a threat of a move, or a threat of contraction. I think it's terrible. There are real fans with real lives who are really invested in these teams. So I hope for Milwaukee's sake that we don't even come close to that road, that it's a franchise that prospers for a long time.
Yeah, because you're talking about legacy. Like Milwaukee has had like three great eras for basketball. the early 70s, of course, the mid 80s,
yep,
and a little bit in the early 2000s.
Yeah, that's right. They did, actually.
With Allen.
I guess Michael Redd was the linchpin on that team. I'm trying to think who else they had.
Actually, Michael Redd was kind of he was like younger, but they had Ray Allen.
Ray Allen, that's right.
Ben Robinson.
Yeah, right.
Glenn Sam Robinson. Cassell.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was a team that had some talent. There's no question. And look, and I had this conversation. I was just talking to a guy from Slam Magazine, a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how these teams are constructed. He asked me about how do the Tampa Bay Rays, because you wrote the extra 2% about the Tampa Bay Rays, how does that compare to small market basketball clubs? And here's the thing. I mean, if you are really bad for a couple of years, you can get potential franchise players with one of the top five picks in the draft. I mean, you look at the Clippers. This is obviously not a small market team. They play in L.A., for goodness sake. But the bottom line is now they have Blake and they have Gordon. And this is a real team. And if they get, you know, if Dwight Howard comes on free agency and says, I'm going to go to L.A., now they are suddenly a really, really scary team. And it just takes one or two. So, you know, the Bucks don't really have that guy. I like Jennings. I like Bogut. I like some of their guys. I wouldn't say they have that kind of absolute stone cold amazing building block. But, you know, suck for a couple of years and it'll probably happen. I mean, that's just how it goes. So the teams are almost worse off. We had this conversation too. It's a team like the Houston Rockets, and a guy like Daryl Morey, their general manager, gets a lot of credit for doing a great job of finding kind of hidden talent. Carl Landry and Kyle Lowry and all these guys who really are good role players, but because they do more with less every year, they're never that bad, so they never get like a top three pick. They can't draft John Wall. They can't draft Blake Griffin, so they might exist in mediocrity forever. You're almost better off, not about tanking on purpose, but just finding some formula whereby you stink just for a short time, you get a John Wall, and then you could start building up.
Tanking?
The Bucks haven't really had that either. They haven't had the number one pick, you know, what, since Glenn Robinson?
Since we've had it with Bogut.
Oh, that's right, Bogut. And Bogut's a fine player, but that was not the strongest draft in the world. That was the problem.
Yeah, that was a Chris Paul, Darren Williams draft, but Bogut's been injured.
That's a strong draft. Never mind.
Yeah, but Bogut can – I know this is a Bruce show, but – Bogut could be, you know, a really good center, but he just gets injured. He has that Bill Walton thing about him.
Yeah, well, and Bogut brings, you know, intangible tangibles, right? The fact that you're actually buying tickets for a whole section of people and getting them fired up, there's something to be said for that. There is no other NBA player who does that. It would be nice if he was a 27-point scorer. I mean, that would be probably more valuable to the Bucks. But you'll take it. You know, this isn't a total whiff. We're not talking about Michael Olowokandji. It's a real basketball player.
Or Kwame Brown or something like that.
Kwame Brown, sure.
But let's actually go back to baseball for a second. And of course, the Milwaukee Brewers did make a bunch of trades, and they basically just gutted their entire farm system.
Yep.
Do you like really like that approach, where teams are like, let's gut this, but we're gonna get the best players possible. We're gonna get Zach Greinke or Sean Markham. But both Markham and Greinke only have 2 years left in their contract.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, the guys that they gave up, they didn't give up, you know, the next Bryce Harper or whatever.
Yeah.
They gave up Alcides Escobar and Lorenzo Cain and some of the other guys they gave up. Yeah, there could be solid major league players, there's no question. But I don't think I saw one guy who you could say this is a stone-cold, blue-chip prospect, 10-year all-star. They could be 10-year all-stars, but that's not the projection right now. And so,
yeah, we don't have a Zach Greinke potential player.
No, right, exactly. You know, Zach Greinke, there is no one guy who has that upside. Zach Greinke doesn't have Zach Greinke upside. He already is Zach Greinke. And, well, I mean, it's a silly thing to say, but it's totally true.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, the thing about prospect rankings, it's so funny. Everybody reads Baseball America, and I just had Kevin Goldstein on my – by the way, jonahcarey.com.
Yeah.
You can check out my podcast, and I had Kevin Goldstein on today. And he's a guy who writes for Baseball Prospectus, does a great job with prospects. And, you know, when you get into prospect talk, every team has like a top – who are the top 10 prospects in this organization? But the top 10 prospects in the Brewers organization means something very different than the Rays or the Royals or the Braves or teams that are stacked in the minor leagues. Just because you trade your number one or number two guy doesn't mean those guys are necessarily worth a damn. They might not be that good. And that's what I think is the difference here is, yeah, those were some of the best Brewers prospects, but – it is what it is. You don't worry about, well, we just lost our best three guys. You worry about, what did I physically trade away? And again, I go back to exactly what you said. There is no future Greinke and there is no present Greinke that they gave up.
Yeah, and everybody's like, oh, we got rid of Jeremy Jeffress, who is one strike away from being suspended for baseball forever.
Yeah, that's right.
Suspension away. And hey, we got rid of Lorenzo Cain, but unlike 99.98% of all Brewers fans, I'm actually really optimistic about Gomez. Because of the fact that Ron Roenick, our new manager, wants to run the bases. And, you know, Gomez likes to run the bases, and he's really good at it.
Well, if he pinch runs for every guy, then he'll be able to get on base. Otherwise, I worry about how he's going to This is the problem. And by the way, he's a great defensive player. And I think that, you know, I agree with you that it's nice if you have a base dealer, but a low on base guy is not going to get on. It's not going to happen that much. You just need to be on base to steal. But to me, the defense is the bigger issue. And especially because you are, I don't want to say punting defense in a bunch of positions, but it's not the strongest defense. McGee's okay. Weeks has improved a little bit. He's not great. Fielder's not great. Braun was a butcher at third base. He's better at left than he was at third, but he's not great. Obviously, we know about Betancourt. It's nice to have one guy. It's nice to have one guy who's a vacuum cleaner out there. Gomez is clearly their best defensive player, and even if he hits for no power and puts up a 290 on base, his sheer range and just ability to do that, it makes a difference. And if you fancy yourself as a team that, although it has a good offense, that still has good starting pitching, the starting pitching needs some support. You know, Gallardo puts the ball in the air. You want somebody to catch it. So it's nice that you have Gomez out there. So he's not old. I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible that he could pump up his batting average a little bit and some things could happen, but you're probably dealing with an offensive black hole. You suck it up. You say, listen, we got Fielder and Hart and Braun and all these other guys. Okay, this guy's not going to hit. I'm fine with that. He's going to be a great defensive player. So I think that's what you're looking at in that respect. The only thing I'd say about shortstop is that with Betancourt, he can't hit either, and he can't field. So now you're dealing with two guys in your lineup who can't hit at all with Gomez and Betancourt, and one of them can't field either. And by the way, catcher, Luke Roy has some mild potential, but got to stay healthy, he's got to develop and all this. So maybe even three positions, five positions that could be really just very, very strong. McGee's underrated. He hits. But the other three guys struggle offensively, and at least one out of three is terrible defensively. So and right up the middle, too. Right up the middle positions are often, the most important. So we'll see. The season is young, and maybe when you get to the deadline, they could say, all right, we're going to make a run for it. We're going to trade for whoever, the J.J. Hardys of the world, maybe someone to pair with Luke Roy behind the plate, maybe someone to spell Gomez. I think there are deals yet to be made for the Brewers.
Most definitely, and let's break away from sports for a second. Talk about the Jonah Carey podcast.
Yes, sir.
One of the great sports shows. It's actually a lot different from other shows that talk about a bunch of the latest topics. You have just specific guest every single show, and that's what I like. You talk, of course, you probably talk about 5-6 different topics, but it's just one guy who a lot of people know, like Dan Shulman, who you had, and of course Kevin Goldstein.
Yep,
and I think you had Amy Nelson.
Stansky, Rob Nyer.
Yeah.
Lots Stansky. Of good. Yep.
And no, I actually like Rob Nyer, and that was a very interesting move for him, moving from SB Nation from ESPN to SB Nation.
Yeah. And listen, I have a decent Rolodex, and like you, and you get good guests, too, and you just ask. And if they say yes, that's great. And I'm literally like that. I email Tim Raines, and I say, hey, Tim Raines, want to come to my podcast? He says, sure. And there you go. And it's good to have a diversity of topics. I like that. But there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. I just happen to not have one particular thing that I'm interested in more than anything. But there's nothing wrong with a team-specific podcast or a topic-specific podcast. I just feel like I wanted to this is the kind of conversation that I'd have over drinks with somebody. And so I want to extend that to the podcast format. Actually, the next guest I have coming up is – he's a renaissance man. Assuming that this works out, that'll be maybe my best one to date. And it's good. I like the idea of having people who are versatile that way. I actually have to tip my cap definitely to Bill Simmons over at ESPN. I mean, he set the template. You know, you're talking about a guy who does different topics as well. I'm not saying that I'm mimicking his podcast per se. First of all, my whatever friends in the business or people that I like to talk to are different than his. That's a great template. I mean, what he does is excellent. It's very casual, but it's really professional and really well done. And I think that, that's a good standard to shoot for. There are standard bearers. Posnansky writes great columns, and Simmons does a great podcast, and on down the road. And it's a great industry that we're in, and you know, if I can not embarrass myself, you know, compared to people like this, then I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job.
And Simmons can write, like, probably 3,000 words about the role of Nedeljkovic on Celtics.
3,000? Come on. 3,000 is part one. Please.
Part one. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, but actually, Simmons, like, writes a bunch of words, but it's the kind of thing that you can get done, you know, quickly. That's just
so easy. Yeah, right. It is easy reading, and it's funny to think about it now, but that's a new genre. That didn't really exist 10 years ago when he was starting out. I mean, you know, it was I'm a little younger than he is, but not that much younger. And you know, I can remember, you come out of college, and you got to pay your dues and go work for the local newspaper and sit behind the guy, and you're getting nowhere. You got to write these very straight stories. You can't really do anything, and the web comes along, and it just changes everything. And now there's a lot of people who I don't think they necessarily model the game after him, but it's just this osmosis that takes place where you can write about sports or podcast about sports, but you can have fun with it. It doesn't have to be so-and-so went 3-for-4 last night. Here's his batting average. Here's his boring quote after the game where he said that he, you know, tried really hard and he's doing a good job of hitting the slider. You can go way beyond that. And you know, whether it's Simmons or the many other people, I mean, Nyer's been at it even longer than Simmons, actually. Someone like that, just a lot of these pioneers, that's great. You know, that's great that there are other options for people who want to get into the business.
Yeah, and actually, on my show, one of my co-hosts on the Bucks show is going to have a rant about Mike Redd. I mean, you don't exactly hear that, it's, you know, every single day.
Yeah, right. No, that's definitely true. And the ability to have that format is great.
Yeah. And you're talking with Kevin Goldstein on the Jonah Carey podcast. Check it out on iTunes or jonahcarey.com.
Yep.
And you're talking about, like, podcasts. If you don't podcast for a specific, you know, website, like ESPN podcast can't do this, but you can basically say whatever you want, however you want, and you can swear and all that stuff. Like,
yeah.
It's so much better than, you know, radio, and you don't have to deal with all these, you know, annoying callers, say, calling up with, you know, outrageous trade proposals like, oh, I want to trade Andrew Bogut and Brandon Jennings for LeBron James and Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get
I mean, the format, that's radio's own fault. Radio doesn't, they don't have to have callers. They don't have to do things the way they do. That's just the way they've always done it. And it used to be that writing was always that way too. And it changed. There became bloggers and people did it differently. And you can do that with audio too. And there are a few radio guys who try to, or gals who try to break the mold. But for the most part, it's the same. And it's the same with writing. There are still people who write the same boring stuff. So, you know, it's radio's own fault that they're stuck in that realm. It's not that I'm suddenly liberated because I'm a podcast. Yes, it is the case that people can swear on my podcast. Although I don't really encourage a huge swearing guy. But
what do you like to speak French? Every
I speak French and I talk about The Simpsons and all kinds of BS that, you know, people would not talk about normally because that's my personality. And you should be able to show your personality on radio, short of maybe, you know, dropping F bombs. I don't see why you can't do that. And you should be able to, even if you write for if you write for the Wall Street Journal, a very serious publication. Some of your style, your flair, should be able to show. I think those are the kinds of people that can get ahead. That you take a professional approach, you do your research, and you're smart, but you have a style about it. You know, whatever kind of style, you could be a troll. You could be, you know, someone who's egging people on. But at least that's yours. At least you own it. I don't, you know, the people that just go down the middle, I don't know. It's hard to generate interest that way.
Yeah, and I totally agree with everything you have to say about that. And you're talking about having guests, and I just want – I don't, like – I'm really interested in having, like, the biggest guests. It would be cool. But I'm like, guys that – like, bench guys and guys that have great stories. Like, the first ever guy I had was, you know, a bench player named Primož Brezić.
Yep.
And
– you had him on the podcast?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, no, I haven't heard of Primož Brezić. That's good. Yeah, well, and it's funny about sports because sometimes – like when I was researching The Extra 2%, the book I did about the Rays, I interviewed a bunch of players, but the guys I spoke to the most wasn't Evan Longoria. It wasn't David Price. It was like D'Honor Navarro, who's not even on the team anymore. He used to be their catcher. And Gabe Kapler, who was a bench warmer. Mm-hmm. And
I love the Gabe Kapler.
What's that?
I love the Gabe Kapler. He was great.
Gabe Kapler was great. He was in the Brewers organization, and he was awesome. And guys like that. Fernando Perez is another one. He's a fringe player. Got traded to the Cubs. but he's like a published poet whose parents emigrated from Cuba, and he went to Columbia, and he studied creative writing. These guys are very interesting, and oftentimes when you have a superstar, you know, since the time they've been playing AAU and they're 10 years old, if you're talking about a basketball player, they're just not that interesting. People suck up to them, and they don't the intellectual exploration is not necessarily their forte. They're just really, really good at shooting jump shots. Listen, I couldn't tell you about Primo's Bracelet. Maybe he was a great guest and maybe he wasn't, but I think it often is the case that when you have a bench guy in whatever sport, number one, there might be more going on upstairs, and number two, they're going to be more willing. They're going to open up to you because nobody ever goes into the locker room and says, yeah, let's interview Primo's for 2 hours. If it's the Bucks, they're going to talk to Bogut. If it's the Heat, they're going to talk to LeBron. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, and you had one of my personal favorite episodes of yours was talking to Dirk Hayhurst.
Yeah.
Has written, a book, and it is a major league player, fringe major league baseball, relief pitcher, but it was really, interesting. I also follow him on Twitter. I think it's like the Garfoos or something like that. But, this is one of the guys that you have never heard, speak, on ESPN or on these radio stations.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I really don't like about the, radio is that they're like, at 6:30, we're going to have LeBron James. And LeBron James basically says nothing. They have on Tiger Woods, who just basically says nothing because Tiger has been a golfer since he was in diapers.
Right. Yeah. It's a star system, man. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Listen, we can extend that all the way to after their careers, and Dan Marino has a job with the NFL doing analysis, and Dan Marino's a stupid idiot. He has nothing interesting to say at all. Maybe he's a smart guy in real life, but he's not smart on TV. I could not care less about his analysis. I don't find it interesting. I don't need a stat head out there, but give me an ex-player who has something to say, even if it's a whatever third-string safety or a backup middle linebacker. And so We're stuck in that, and the web is great. There are a lot of good things that have happened that make it a meritocracy.
There's also a lot of not so things.
There is whatever nepotism and star system. That's always going to exist. Always. It's just the way it is.
Like 90% of the people that are writing on Bleacher Report, I'm not saying specific names, but some of those articles are just not that good.
How dare you besmirch Bleacher Report? Actually, I will say this. King Kaufman, who's a good friend of mine, they hired him to do
that. That was a brilliant idea, though.
It is a brilliant idea. He's a dedicated editor, and I can tell you for a fact that they are making changes. It's better than it's been, and I know that Bleacher Report gets a lot of flack. First of all, you have to keep in mind that you're talking about people that are trying out writing for the first time. That's specific. It's not an accident that that's the business. That is how they set it up. That's really cool if you're 16, 17 years old, or 20 or whatever, and you could write for them, and you have a platform. That's fine. If you're someone who wants to digest great analysis, okay, fine. It doesn't have a good history that way. But the point of what King is trying to do is create an environment where they're going to pluck the best young guys or gals and nurture them to the point that, okay, they become 25 and 30 and they could be the established names on that blog. So it's a feeder system. If you have 100 people, maybe 95 are not going to work out. But there will be 5 that are pretty good, and there's something to be said for that. And I like the fact that it's a democracy and a meritocracy. And if you're good, then, maybe eventually you'll get ahead.
Yeah, and that's a good thing about, the Internet and Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff is that you can find these underrated or younger, people and just, build them up. Unlike 15, 20 years ago, I guess even 10 years ago, where you didn't have that, you had to, be an intern at this newspaper, then, go up from being this position to this position, to this position, you finally end up being a top guy when you're in your 30s.
Right.
And now,
go ahead.
Now, websites, some bigger websites, like probably look at Bleacher Report or some other. Wow, the phone. And some other, crazy weird blogs say, hey, these guys are pretty good. Like ESPN with a True Hoop.
Yeah.
Like Buxyball and, Brew Hoop. You were talking about Brew Hoop before and Frank Madden. Those are very, great websites. Great informative websites,
Absolutely. Yeah, no, True Hoop has done a great job and Sweet Spot Blog does that on ESPN, and obviously SB Nation, the whole model of SB Nation is to get that kind of thing going. So sure, listen, a lot of those people are not making a living, let's face facts. They're working very hard, they're producing great content, but they're not making enough, forget about making enough to, pay the mortgage or pay the rent or whatever. I mean, you know, they're making beer money at best. And that is a concern, and I'd like to see that change. But, you know, hopefully as these businesses grow, especially something like SB Nation, then maybe there does become more revenue for them, and they do get to the point that more writers are paid. That's always a challenge, of course. You have the explosion of opportunity, but it's not like everybody can get it. You know, they're 21 years old, and you can just get paid $80,000 off the bat. It just does not work that way.
You have to work your way up. And the writer of Buxyball actually works at Walgreens.
Is that right? That's great.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, everybody's like, he's such a great source of information, which he is, but when he's not writing, he, delivers medicine.
I mean, I used to write for a publication called Baseball Prospectus.
Yeah.
Let's see. One guy was a meteorologist, a really good one. One guy was a dermatologist. One guy was a management consultant. One guy, it was all over the place. One guy worked at like an accounting firm, and these were mostly white collar jobs. I wouldn't say that it was Walgreens, but yeah, I mean, it's hard. Not that many people, unless you're really, really in the mainstream, can make a full-time living. This is the double-edged sword, that you get the opportunity, but to have a real wage where if you're married and have a family and all this, to do that, yeah, it's tough going, man. I mean, people can go through their whole lives and they can struggle. Even if you're talented and even if you're good, there's just only a certain amount of resources out there. So
yeah, but look at the Basketball Jones. They made their way up from, being just an ordinary podcast and now working at the ESPN equivalent in Canada.
The Score, and I know Jay Skeets and Tess Melson, those guys, and I just had a conversation with a buddy of mine who lives in Toronto, in the same building as Skeets does, as a matter of fact, and he didn't really know, he just knew Skeets a little socially, but didn't know him as Skeets, the guy on TV, and they said, wow, this guy's great, and I said, yeah, of course he's great, and they've been doing it, and that's when you get into quality, when you talk about the podcast that they do. And sometimes occasionally the writing that they do and the network that they've built up, that's all just hustle and talent. And there's a lot to be said for that. That you can get your opportunities, but you've got to be able to execute it. And aside from the fact that they work really hard, they have God-given talent in what they do. They're really good at it. And there's a reason that they have a TV show and they're popular and all this. It's because they're damn good.
And another great example is the Batting Stance guy.
I'm sorry, the what?
The Batting Stance guy.
Oh, yeah.
You went from...
Yeah, there's a guy in his backyard, right?
Yeah, and he was on David Letterman.
Yeah, right. And I mean, what's his skill? You know, he imitates
players
from... He can
tell you how Royce Clayton had his band stance in 2001.
Yeah, or older, guys from the 80s, does it well. So, there are ways to make a living. There are niche ways to make a living, but it takes work, takes talent, takes luck, and meet some people. If you know people, that helps. You find that more and more as you go along.
Yeah, most definitely, and you're of course you're a busy man promoting your latest book, of course. Do you have any plugging to do?
Yeah, it's called The Extra 2%. Comes out March 8th, and you can pre-order it right now on Amazon.com, IndieBound, BN.com, Powell's, any of those places, or you could just go to extra2%.com. And order it right off the website. And like I said, even if you're not a big Tampa Bay Rays fan, even if you're not a stats nerd, even if you're very, very casual about this whole thing, it's fun. It's a fun read. It's 2+ years of my life in that thing, and I think it's pretty good. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, most definitely. Do you have anything else?
Do I have anything else? Follow me on Twitter, I guess, at Jonah Carey, Jonah Kerry. But be warned, 80% of my tweets are either going to be about The Simpsons or about how Montreal bagels are much better than New York bagels.
I could deal with The Simpsons because I like that, but bagels, really?
It's a holy war of bagels. This is a very serious thing. I have many New York friends on Twitter, and we get into bloody, bloody arguments. Listen, you put a New York bagel and a Montreal bagel in front of you, you toast them up and put some cream cheese on them, you tell me which one is better. I think you'll find
it. They need to have that on, like, Mad versus Food or something. They need to have a show on the
Food Network. By the way, I love that show. He's never been to Montreal on his show, and I'm waiting because Montreal is like a food, it's mania over there. And in fact, one of my happiest moments of the last few months was finding out that one of the dishes that the Brewers were going to add at Miller Park was they were going to add poutine, which is a uniquely... Quebecois. It's a Quebecois dish, but it's such a Wisconsin thing. It's just French fries with cheese and cheese curds and grape top. That's total Wisconsin move right there.
Speaking of Man
versus Food. That's cool that they'll have that at the ballpark. Gives me Yeah.
Speaking of Mandarin, they had an episode with where they went to Milwaukee in this place called AJ Bombers.
Okay, I haven't seen that one. Yeah.
It's called the Brockness Monster Burger. And it's I don't know, I forgot all the ingredients, but I remember too. It's like peanut butter and bacon.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't understand how that can actually make a good burger, but I don't know. They're selling it at AJ Bombers in Milwaukee. Just nuts.
Sounds good. That sounds really good too. Well, I mean, this is another reason to get back. I've been to Milwaukee in a long time. I went on a baseball road trip. I went to County Stadium. I've actually never been to Miller Park, which is terrible. I know, it's great. Went to County Stadium in the 90s when I was doing road trips with my idiot buddies when we were younger. And we sat right behind us was Pamela Polk. Pamela Polk was the reigning Miss Wisconsin, and she was actually wearing her sash and sitting in the stands. And so all my buddies immediately – I was the only one who was not single. And they all started hitting on her. And drinking ensued, and we ate many, many sausages, and it was a ridiculously awesome day. And I can remember Bud Selig was still the owner of the team, and wildly popular. I couldn't believe how, you know, he was already interim commissioner, but he's still owning the team. And during the seventh inning stretch, he comes out of his box, and he's sort of standing out there, and people start chanting, "Bud, Bud, Bud, Bud." I'm just like, really? This guy who screwed the Expos in 1994 and caused the strike, people really like this guy? So I don't know. People in Wisconsin are maybe a little bit too pleasant. The fact that you're cheering for this person, I don't know what to say about that.
Well, he has his own statue now.
I know he does, and hopefully the pigeons.
You know what? You know what? You can say all the bad things you want to say about Bud, which
I do.
But
I will.
He brought baseball back to Milwaukee. And that's
right.
Basically deserving of a statue as much as, you know, Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, you know, Bob Uecker, all these, you know, great, you know, Brewers. But he brought baseball back to Milwaukee.
You could make that argument. He also took the team from another market. I mean, the team used to be in Seattle, and then it wasn't. And you know, so there's all, again, it's what we talked about. You know, you can, it's great when a new city gets a team and there's enthusiasm, and I'm happy for the good people of Oklahoma City. But it stinks if you're a Seattle Supersonics fan. And if the Bucks actually go down the road and it becomes a possibility they move, that would stink for people in Milwaukee. There's two sides to every coin. You know, people, Indianapolis Colts, that's great, stinks for Baltimore. Washington Nationals, that's great, stinks for Montreal. There's always another side to it. And I always feel very lukewarm. Even if it's a success story, I always feel lukewarm about a city losing a team. So there you go, Bud Selig. Even that, I'm not impressed.
Yeah, if the Bucks do move to, like, Vegas, they can keep the Bucks name. Just have money as a logo, except for a learn for a buck.
Oh. All right, that's the only good angle I can think of for a relocation. I'm willing to go along with that. That's fine.
Just add, like, I don't know who would be the mascot. Just like,
I don't know. Who's made of money? I guess Alex Rodriguez? Albert Pujols? I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, but, thank you. Thank you, Jonah, for coming on. You can come on whenever you want. Of course, check out the Jonah Carey podcast, Jonah Carey, add Jonah Carey on Twitter. And of course, JonahCarey.com and his book. He's a internet superstar.
Thank you, sir. You're too kind. Good luck with your own podcast.
Thank you, Jenna.
Cheers.
So welcome back, everybody, to the Brewers Fear Podcast, and we're just going to go into some of the latest Brewers news. We're not going to really talk about spring training because it's spring training and it really doesn't matter. I guess next week we'll talk about some players that have impressed me or maybe Abe. I mean, maybe Nick. Or if Abe is going to come on, of course, I'll talk to him about that, about the topic of spring training. Players that have impressed us, but let's go into some of the latest Brewers news. And it basically revolves around injuries. And the first injury is probably the worst possible injury that you want during spring training. It's not as bad as like an Adam Plane right the deal is Joe, most valuable player. Ahead of my time, so I guess I'll check it later. Bad. Don't believe me, then I guess I'll see you hater. Well, naturally snapping, man, I bet you see me hater. But rather do me a favor. Take a listen to these writings over these rhythms and leave it spitting behind your vision. Yeah, I'm back at it like my spine's magnetic. This one and there to be a spin-off after my credits. I'm dismantic on the dawn of a table for the dawn. The J from my mom's hanging.
Love it to the death of me, and secondly, the rap game is run sketchily. When I play that, it's not like myself in jeopardy.
I won't be trying to make the 1996 Chicago Bulls or the 2000-2001 Milwaukee Bucks. Stop trying to act like Mark Pope. You know? Act like Zach Greinke. Now, let's play some Pig, let's play some, you know, Lightning, and let's not play like Die Hard, like pickup. You know, basketball, but it was kind of a freak injury, but I just want to see my players.
Why Mark Pope?
I just have to mention a you know, bench player on the 2000-2001 Bucks team.
Okay.
Like, I'm saying like a lot, but the injury really doesn't, I guess, hurt us because of the fact that it's only 4 to 6 weeks and we're about like 3 weeks away from, you know, opening day, and she's probably going to be out, like, at worst 3 weeks into the actual season, and maybe he's going to have some, you know, sense in the minors, so 3-4 weeks, he is going to be, you know, out for the actual Major League season, but that's at the utmost worst, and, like, the way that, like, the first month of the season is arranged, you can probably live with four pitchers. And, like, starting rotation of Gallardo, Markham, Wolf, Narvison is not that bad. It's not absolutely downright horrible, you know? Nick?
I'm a little frustrated of how the injury started by him playing basketball. We're in spring training and he's out playing basketball. Maybe if this happened a month ago, you could be like, okay, he's bored and playing basketball. But they're in Arizona. Should be training for the biggest season of his career.
Yeah.
And he's,
I guess, playing the first ever season where his team can win more than like 80 games.
Yeah, and he cracks a rib playing basketball. I mean, I never played at the high level basketball, but I never played so hard where I hit my rib anywhere. So I don't know what he was doing. Did he was diving or did he fall or I don't know. I mean, I don't even want to get into what he was doing, but with that being said, I'm not too worried with the injury because, like you said, we could get by with the pitches we have so far for the first month in the season. I mean, I'm comfortable with having Marco Mangarado to carry the load the first month. I mean, because if he misses more than two starts, then probably we as fans should be worried. But I don't think we should have anything to worry about because they said 4 to 6 weeks and. From what I heard, we're already 2 weeks into the injury, so.
Oh, really? I guess
that's what I heard when I was on the radio. The Brewers' insider said that the injury happened 2 weeks ago, I think.
So he could be back at he could still be pitching some games on
maybe
the end of spring training.
My only worry is that the Brewers are trying to make this injury sound less than what it is because they don't want us fans to panic and they want to have ticket sales.
We're not the Bucks.
I just have that feeling that maybe that they're trying to make it sound less than what it really is, and they need those ticket sales to be sold out every home game the first month, so they don't want people to start panicking. And
yeah, but there's a big difference with, like, pitchers. Like, the rotation is, you know, scheduled and advanced.
Right, yeah, you only start once every five games, so.
And like, on a Monday, you know it's going to pitch on, like, a Thursday or Friday, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not too worried. I'm not panicking. Maybe some fans out there are, because there's always going to be some fans.
Why would you panic? Like you said, 2 weeks, it's a 4 to 6 week injury. And
yeah.
Still
he's our best player and our ticket to get to where we always, us as Brewer fans, always wanted to get to, so. We don't want anything bad to happen to our best players. Very touchy, but I'm not too worried. And as long as that the injury goes as scheduled and there's nothing that happens between now and the first month of the season that causes him to miss more time, then we shouldn't have anything to worry about as fans. And Gardo and Markham and Wolf,
not okay. Not a dog. He's not a dog.
Whatever. And Narvison, they could carry the load because nobody really knows what happens the first month of the season anyway. Because I don't remember the first.
It's
month
a
162
game season.
Right. So we should be fine because nobody remembers the first month. I do remember a lot of blown saves by a specific closer, but that's all I remember from the first month of last season.
Yeah, we're not gonna have a pop incident again. Trust the stash with Mr. Expert. Trust them. I trust them, even though that we kind of have a history of guys that, you know, coming out of nowhere in the first season and just crumble for the next few seasons. They're crumble! So yeah, I guess we can talk about the next, I guess, injury for the Bucks. I mean, the Brewers.
Well, who isn't hurt for the Bucks?
we're not gonna quite go there.
That's a different show, yeah.
Listen to the Bucks as first, talk about that. But, Another weird injury for the Brewers is our starting catcher for the future in Jonathan Lucroy. This happened about 2 to 3 weeks ago, but we haven't done a show in a while. We didn't talk about this injury then, and that's Lucroy being out with a broken pinky. But yeah. What's so funny? What's so funny, Nick?
Nothing. Just thinking about the Brewers.
Alright. But, sorry, Lucroy is gonna be out with a broken pinky. Well, he's, like a guy out of, no need to worry about these, like, little, like, spring training injuries. Unless it's, like, a broken leg or something, like, horrible like that. There's, like, really no need to worry, though. Right?
Yeah. I mean, Lucroy, I don't think is as big of an injury than the Greinke injury.
Of course not.
I mean, it's only a pinky. It's probably the least important bone on your whole hand. So, and I mean, it's not like he had a spectacular season. We're counting on him in the lineup because he was probably going to be the eighth hitter in the lineup anyway. So. Eighth or seventh, but
that's kind of like you look at a kind of entry like that. You're like, okay, that kind of sucks, but I can live with that.
Right, because I don't think it would have made him play any worse or better than his production from last year. Because he only hit 250.
But the thing is, he's still like a young player, like still developing, and it's kind of, you know, slowing down.
But... Yeah, I mean, it's always never good to have anything to affect your play, but I don't think it's anything we should.
Yeah, it's not like a broken.
Maybe he's worried about it, but I don't think anyone had high expectations for him, so.
It's not something bad, like a broken wrist.
Right. So, like we said, it's a long baseball season, and it'll probably gradually, his pinky will get better, and hopefully he get comfortable at the plate, but maybe it could make him hit worse, but I didn't really expect him to do much at the plate anyway this year, so whatever he gets, because he hit 250 last year, and I don't, anything worse than that, I don't think
and his name is Jason Kendall.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's players that, we have players hit worse than that, 250, I'm not too worried about it, because he's LaCroix. I mean, did anybody really expect much out of him this year? So, well, we have Rivera, and we have players to... He was probably not going to be the everyday catcher anyway, because I had a feeling he was probably going to tweak with the lineup the first half of the season.
Because we have, four, catchers that have had, some sort of starting experience. Like, Mike Rivera really hasn't. Like, when Kendall was hurt, maybe, but he was actually... Rivera had some decent stretches in his career, but he's been mainly like a everyday backup, so it's good coming off the bench every so often. But, you know, Kataris started some games, and he was not that bad. And we bring Will Nieves, who is basically like an older version of like George Kataris. So, the catching position is not really that good, but it's not as bad as, the center field and shortstop positions. Right, Nick?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, we're strong at other every position. You'd think be us having the weak at the catcher that we could probably overcome that.
Yeah.
With all the high-power offense we have and high-power pitching staff that we had, so... I'm not too worried about it. I am a little worried with the shortstop, catcher, and center field being a weak point. Because if all three of them are struggling, then it could really mess up the offense throughout the year. But I'm not too worried about it now. I say that now because the season hasn't started, so my expectations are high. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
They'll be fine. I don't have any facts to back that up, but...
But the shortstop position, you know, batting court is historically bad, but we have Craig Counsell backing him up. And,
right.
All Brewers fans are absolutely in love with Craig Counsell for obvious reasons, other than the fact that he's a Wisconsin native, and he's probably going to retire at the end of the season, as a Brewer, but he's just a reliable guy that can get you one or two hits when you need him. Give you one or two hits and a start when Bannockburn is being historically bad, and Craig Counsell's not the worst, but not the best at his position, and yeah, he's just that guy that I can trust. But the thing is, Bannockburn just has to be historically bad at both defense and, he's decent offense, but he's just bad. I mean, bad, bad. Badder than Ryan Braun at third base bad. And that's bad. I'm saying a lot of bad, but Bannockburn is bad. And, center field, Gomez is, I'm just going to say this word again, but Gomez is bad at offense, but he's amazing at defense. And, like, you know, Braun and Corey Hart are, you know, decent defenders, but they're not at the, you know, Gomez level of defense play. Nick. I think not really that surprised, but I think that we lost Nick. So we're just gonna continue with the show. Like I said before, there's really nothing to talk about in terms of spring training. It's just, you know, spring training. Like some players like have good averages, like are doing good, like Caleb Gindel and Dallas Walker, some of like the younger guys that are trying to make the roster. Like, but it's, like, there's been a history of you know, players like doing good in spring training but just not doing good in regular season. I think one of the biggest exceptions, of course, is, you know, Casey McGee, who, you know, made the roster based on, you know, his play in you know, spring training. But he turned out to be a really good player. And, you know, and Nick is back. Hi. Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Where did he go?
Had some personal matters to take care of.
All right. So, I was talking a little bit about the spring training, but I guess we can both go back to, I was talking about shortstop and, you know, center field. I guess you heard me talk about Craig Counsell, right?
Yes.
He's just that reliable guy that he can trust to get, like, one or two hits in a game when Benacourt is being historically bad. But, like, at center field, like, Gomez is, I guess, historically bad offensively. Like, when you look at the statistics, it's, like, really not as bad as, like, Brewer fans, like, actually think. But he's, of course, not that good offensively, but he's great defensively. And both like, Braun and Hart have, like, can make amazing plays, but they're just basically average defensively, and you need a guy on your team that can, you know, have those web gyms, have those, like, weekly to daily, you know, web gym kind of plays, and Gomez does that for the team. Right, Nick?
Yeah. I mean, he's a good defender, but just horrible at the plate. Just frustrating, horrible, actually. Just sometimes you just don't understand what he's thinking when he's at the plate, but you can hope his offense could overshadow his. I would hope that his defense could overshadow his offense. Yeah, I mean, if his offense did overshadow his offense, that would be.
What? His offense overshadowed his offense? Okay, then. I mean, that makes this much sense.
Right, but yeah, Gomez is one of those players who has potential to be a very good player. I mean, he's. Has the defense down, but just needs to be not good at the plate, but he could just be average, someone who could get on base regularly and could hit a few home runs. Like,
you're looking for like a 250, 260 average.
Yeah, not we're not looking for some great, just maybe 260, not no 220 or
220. We're not looking for the next Pete Rose.
Right, I mean, but he can't hit 203 or 220. I mean, that's not helping the team at all. So, but I'm pretty sure he's taking the season serious, and I've heard he's been working hard. So, hopefully, when the season starts, he'll have the same focus he's been having spring training at.
And he currently has a 367 average, but
that's
spring training going against the guys on other teams that are trying to make the 25-man roster, but they just hitting the ball, which counts. Making contact, he's getting on base, and when he's on base, he is one of the most dangerous players that the Brewers have had on the bases for a while. Like if he could like hit like Scott Pesenik, then he can steal as many bases as Scott Pesenik. He's that kind of you know fast, player. Well, I guess that basically wraps up this episode of the Brewers Fear podcast, and we are currently at the recording of the show about 20 days, 14 hours, 6 minutes, and 40 seconds away from opening day 2010 opening day 2011. Wow, Dakota. You're kind of 3 months behind the schedule. But, opening day 2011, March 31st, 2011. So the season is just upon us. And actually, I want to make an announcement here. I'm starting up the personal Brewers Beaver Fantasy Baseball League. I don't know how many people, want to be in the league. If you do want to be in the league, email us at brewersfever@gmail.com. Of course, give me the info. That's going to be ESPN.com league, and you get to play with such celebrities as Abraham Jaruzelski and Nick McIver. So just email us at brewersfever@gmail.com if you want in the league. So we're going to wrap things up with plugs, and we're going to start off with Nick. Nick, plug.
You can follow me on Twitter at Black MacGyver, black like the color, and MacGyver like the TV show.
Somebody go on Cafe Prezzer, Zazzle, and make a shirt like that. Because Nick has been saying that for about 7 to 6, 7, 8 months now. It's very quote worthy. Black like the color, MacGyver like the TV show. Too big for hashtag, but it's not big. But
it's Black MacGyver, one word.
Yeah. Black like Carl.
I'm pretty sure anyone who's listening and been listening to other ones, I'm not sure I'm saying anything new.
I don't know, but exclamation, make a shirt. That says, black, like, color, MacGyver, like the TV show. But maybe I'm just running on fumes and trying to just say random stuff. It usually always sounds like that, even though I get some rest. But I am running on fumes during this episode. So, of course, Dakota_Schmidt on, of course, the Twitter. And like I said before, brewersfever@gmail.com. Send us, questions via the email like we had on the last episode of the Brewers Fever podcast. Of course, the one that the great Abraham Jaruzelski read. And, of course, if you want in the Brewers Fever Fantasy Baseball League, where we're going to feature the great Nick McIver and Abraham Jaruzelski and probably a bunch of other people. I'm probably going to get some of the past guests to be part of that league. I'll try. But brewersfever@gmail.com if you want, and the ESPN.com Fantasy Baseball League. And Abe, you're going to be part of the league, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah, you're going to compete against the 5 people that listen to the show. Yeah, more people, but I just like to say that because that's what everybody thinks that our listenership is for both the Bucks and Brewers Fear podcast. So we're gonna of course leave you guys right now, and this has been episode number 5.
Oh yeah, I have one more plug.
What?
Also, you could follow Charlie Sheen. If you haven't already followed him.
Why? He's all... I guess... Like, on the podcast, I can do a rant. Whatever. It's over! It's over with Charlie Sheen! I'm just over with the whole winning Tiger Blood Adonis CNA, oh, fastball, oh, I'm Charlie Sheen, Sheen's Corner, oh, Sheen's Corner with a K because I'm so crazy, I'm Charlie Sheen.
I'm sorry, we were so close to ending this show and I just ruined it.
Yeah, my brain of Charlie Sheen for some unknown reason. I'm just... He's just begging for attention. I know deep down inside he's crying because, like, I just hate him when he's set free at last. Oh, I'm sorry. Same with ESPN, NBA. I just hate those spam advertisements that pop on the websites. But as I was saying before, like, when he said free at last, when he lost, got fired from 2.5 Men, why? You're making $2.5 million a week. $2.5 million a week to act. Like Nick probably makes like $15 a week working at Avis. He probably wants to make $2.5 million in his lifetime, but he won't. But Charlie Sheen's made that in 7 days, but oh, free at last, free at last. Oh, thank God, Molly, I'm free at last. Who do you think you are, Martin Luther King? You're not Martin Luther King Jr. You're Charlie Sheen, you're an actor. And Martin Luther King Jr. was a civil rights leader. There's a big difference from bus boycotts to Major League. Alright, Charlie Sheen, shut up. Sheen's Corner is horrible. The only reason why people watch your stupid Ustream shows is to see you do drugs live on Ustream or bash the producers and the directors of 2.5 Men. Just don't follow Charlie Sheen on Twitter, like Nick said. And right now, we are going to wrap up. Show, probably Nick is gonna bring up some other random celebrity that I hate for you to follow, but we're not gonna let Abe speak. We're not gonna let Abe speak because he's probably gonna say, follow Kim Kardashian or something like that. So, episode number 5, Brewer's Fever, done right now.